During the 1980s, there's a fellow named Michael Milken who worked for the Wall Street investment firm of Drexel Burnham. He was involved in one of the biggest cases of illegal insider trading that was ever brought to court. He was assessed a fine of $600 million. Imagine getting a bill in the mail for $600 million. I'm not sure that he paid that much money, but that was his fine. He spent 22 months in jail, and eventually, actually after his time in jail and everything, President Trump pardoned him in 2020, just a couple of years ago. Milken was rich. I mean, talk about a rich guy. This guy was really wealthy. Besides his normal salary back in 1982, which was about $45 million for 1 year in 1982, that was a long time ago, and $45 million was a lot of money. Of course, it still is, but imagine that back then. He was also involved in more than 500 trading partnerships, one of which paid him $473 million. In 1 4-year period in the 1980s, he earned about $1 billion. Not too bad to earn $1 billion over the course of 4 years. Ivan Boesky was one of Milken's trading partners, and he was also rich. He owned an apartment in Paris, he owned another one in London, a condo in Hawaii, and a suite at the Beverly Hills Hilton. Part of his money came from this insider trading that he did with Michael Milken, which, of course, is illegal. Now, what would make people who already have millions of dollars participate in illegal activities like Wall Street, you know, insider trading? What would make a very wealthy person get into illegal activity? Well, for these guys, the desire for more money. They love money. We call that greed. That's what I'll be talking about this morning. Most of us, I think, if we had a couple of $1 million salted away in some savings or bank account, we probably would think about retiring. But these guys had multiple millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars in some cases, and yet they still wanted more. All they could think of was getting more money, and they were willing to participate in illegal activities to get more. Milken and Boesky are just two examples of a very common problem that afflicts not only millionaires and billionaires, but even people like us. Most people are not immune to the sin of greed. Much crime, abuse, and violence are motivated by the desire to get money or to get the things that money can buy. And even if we do nothing overtly illegal, greed can still have a negative impact on our lives. Greed is one of those sins that we might call one of the sins of the Spirit. It could be within our hearts this morning as we sit here in the pews, as we come to church to worship God, we might have a greedy, money-loving heart within us. Well, greed is one of those sins that we must seek to put to death. We must seek to undercut it, root it out of our lives, and put it to death. Well, what does the Bible say about greed? Perhaps one of the choice passages from the Bible that really deals with this issue quite head-on, in quite direct terms, is 1 Timothy 6, verses 3 through 11. And so I'd like to look at that passage and notice what the Bible tells us here about greed. First of all, greed prevents true contentment. Notice verse 5. The overall context here is these false teachers. Notice verse 3. If any man teach otherwise and consent not to wholesome words, according to the doctrine, according to godliness, he's proud, knowing nothing. So we're talking about false teachers here. And one of the marks of a false teacher is greed, or the love of money. They think that prosperity is a sign of godliness. Notice at the end of verse 5, supposing that gain is godliness. In other words, financial prosperity is a sign of God's blessing upon your life. Godliness, they see, is a means of financial gain. Well, is that attitude still with us today? Are there still people today who think that financial wealth is a sign of God's approval on your life? And in fact, the godlier you are, the wealthier you're going to be. Is that still a teaching that we see today? Well, yes, it is in what they call the Health and Wealth Prosperity Gospel, the Name It and Claim It group, what we sometimes call as Word Faith. Oftentimes they talk about contributing to their ministry so that God would contribute to you. if you want to be wealthy, you have to give a seed gift to their TV evangelistic ministry. But these are the people who think that the wealthier you are, the more likely it is that you are godly, or they see that godliness is a means of financial gain. And that is a mark of an unbeliever. That's a mark of a false prophet. And so, unfortunately, that attitude is still with us today. Somebody said that material things should freely be used and enjoyed to the glory of God if one has them, but in no way do they contribute to godliness. In fact, it's often the other way around. It's often the people who are the most wealthy who are the least godly. What did Jesus say about entering into the kingdom of God is like a rich man going through what? The eye of a needle. So rich people typically think of themselves as the source of all that they need. They are intelligent, they're wealthy, they have a good job, they have good prospects. What do they need God for? And so often the wealthy people are the least godly among us. That's not true in every case, but for most people, wealth is not a sign of godliness. And godliness does not necessarily mean that we're going to be wealthy. Instead of financial gain, we should be seeking contentment. Notice in verse 6, but godliness with contentment is great gain. What is the true value in life? Is it money? Is it the things that money can buy? I believe it's fine to have money. I think it's wonderful if you have a good paying job, or let's say your parents had a lot of money and you inherit a lot of money. That's fine. If you want to have a big house and nice things and nice vacations and all the nice things that money can buy, I have no problem with that whatsoever. I would say enjoy it. Enjoy what God gives you. That's all fine and good. But the problem is setting our heart on those things. You know, the Bible talks about the things that we love will be shown in the things that we do, the things that we have. If we are exalting and enjoying all those things and they draw us farther away from God, they can be an idol to us. And that's what it is for some rich people. Their money and the things that money can buy and the enjoyment and the pleasure of life leads people away from God. But contentment is really what we should be striving after. Contentment is great gain. It is a high value for Christians to have contentment in their lives. That's what we ought to be pursuing after. This word contentment means a condition in life in which no aid or support is needed. In other words, to be satisfied with what God has provided for you, to find that what you have is sufficient. Matthew 6:33, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and what? What is the promise? All these things will be added unto you. So we trust God is providing for us. Now we know that God provides normally through work. If a man does not work, he's worth and provide for his family, he's worse than an unbeliever. That's what the Bible says. The typical way that most of us have to provide for ourselves and our family is through work. Now, there are some people who inherit a lot of money, and that's wonderful. That's fine. There are some people who maybe invent something. There's somebody like Michael Milken who, because of his financial acumen, is able to earn millions, if not billions, of dollars. Somebody like Elon Musk comes up with an idea, and all of a sudden he's a multi-billionaire. Well, that's all fine. We don't resent people because they have money. We admire people who are able to earn money like that through their own hard work or through their own good ideas. Typically here in countries like ours that are, you know, capitalistic, we aspire to have the things that people like that have because they've worked hard, they've come up with a good idea, maybe an invention, maybe something that they've sold. And hey, maybe we can be like that. Maybe we can, you know, be wealthy also. Maybe we can enjoy those things as well. So there's no necessary problem with having money or even the lack of having money. The point is not that we set our heart on those things. The point is that we are content with what God gives us. Philippians 4:11, I've learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. And if you look at that passage, he says, I know how to abound and I know how to suffer lack. Well, many of us are in that same category. We know how to abound. Sometimes the Lord has blessed and we have plenty. Other times we've suffered lack. We've not been able to have those three meals a day or have the nice things or have the nice house or the nice vacation or the nice, you know, recreational vehicles and things because we don't have the money to do that. Well, we can be content in whatsoever state that we're in. Contentment is a rare commodity. The human heart is rarely content with the things that we have. When I think of this, I often think of the idea of diminishing returns. And I go back to my when I was a kid, in my teenage years and early college years, I had a great affinity for stereo systems. When I was in the military, I started collecting stereos and, you know, the things that go along with the whole stereo system. And some of my friends had really, you know, killer stereo systems and all the great stuff. And I started collecting those things. And I found that I'd be enamored with a certain piece of stereo equipment, and I'd buy it, and I'd enjoy it for a week or two. And then I'd start thinking, well, there are better things than that out there, and maybe I should set my sights on something else. And pretty soon I had to get the next thing, and then the next thing. And if you know anything about audio equipment, you know that you can spend a lot of money on that kind of thing. Same thing with almost any hobby, whether you're talking photography or golf or any kind of sport, hunting, fishing, recreation, all that stuff. We all know that the sky's the limit when it comes to spending money on those things. And oftentimes we're not satisfied with the things that we have. We buy a brand new car. And how long are you satisfied with a brand new car? Well, maybe a month or two. And then all of a sudden you start noticing the rattle and the thing over here, and this is not quite right. And you see somebody else with a little bit nicer car. And so I think it's human nature not to be satisfied with the things that we typically have. And that could be true financially. It could be true just in our life. You know, the people that we're with, the family that we have, the education that we have, the employment that we have. We're always looking for the next better thing. Let's get something else. Let's do something else. And I think it's just human nature not to be content. So this is where we have to work on this as a character quality, a value, a virtue that we work into our lives, that we are content with the things that God gives us. Now, I don't think that means that we have to settle or be satisfied necessarily with just what we have right now. Because perhaps the Lord will open a door and you'll get a better job. And maybe you can have a little bit better car. Maybe you can have a little bit better vacation. Maybe you can have a little bit nicer clothes, you know. God sometimes gives us more opportunities. He gives us increased wealth. And I don't think that that necessarily means that we have to stay at the, you know, level that we are if we have more resources. But it does mean that whatever God gives us, we are striving to be satisfied with it. He goes on to sort of explain a few things about this. Notice verse 7, "For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain that we can carry nothing out." So remember, Job said, "Naked I came into the world, and naked I'm going to leave." And that's true for all of us. We brought nothing into this world. I suppose in a certain sense, you know, if you're born into a rich family, I guess there's a sense in which you already have possessions when you're born. But, you know, in a certain way, that's not true. Everybody is born with nothing, and everybody will leave this world with nothing, no matter how much you accumulate. This man, Michael Milken, billions of dollars, or somebody like Elon Musk is worth, I think he's one of one of the richest men in the whole world. The founder of Amazon, Jeff Bezos, I think is his name. He may be one of the richest people. Well, how much is he going to leave the world with? He's going to leave everything here when he leaves. A famous millionaire died, and someone asked, "How much did he leave behind?" And the answer, of course, is all of it, every penny. We leave it all behind when we leave this place. The Bible tells us not to lay up treasure on earth, but to lay up treasure in heaven. So some of these people, maybe they will develop and lay up huge stores of wealth here on earth, but what do they have in heaven? Everything that they've done, even if they're a believer, it could be that everything that they've done is wood, hay, and stubble. It's all going to be burnt up and has no value. And so we need to make sure that we're truly laying up treasure in heaven. Those who love money are striving for something that essentially is temporary. You may enjoy it for 70, 80, 90, 100 years here on earth, and I don't have any problem with enjoying the money and the things that God has provided for you, but it's still temporary. And there are more eternal things than just the money and the things that it can buy. So we have to be valuing things that are, as I've said before, good, beautiful, and true, the things that are godly, the things that have value, long-lasting, eternal value. That's really where we have to put, that's where we have to see value. We really only need the basic provisions. We're going to enter this world with nothing. We're going to leave this world with nothing. And while we're here, what should we be satisfied with? Verse 8, "And having food and raiment, let us therewith be content." Be content, be satisfied with the things that we have, particularly food and raiment. Of course, food is, you know, what we need to eat. And raiment is just covering. That could be your clothing. It could be shelter. But as long as we have food and clothing and shelter, those are like the basics of life. That's what God has promised to provide for us. So God has not provided, or God does not promise to provide, the luxuries that we might sometimes like. I mean, even if you're in poverty, you're in far better condition than many, many people around the world. In fact, you've heard that 1% before, you know, the 1% of the population that's so rich and everything. The 1%ers, if you look at the whole world, the top 1%, if you're earning more than $30,000 a year, you're in the top 1% of income earners for the entire world. Years ago, when I was at another church during college, we went down to Mexico on a mission trip. And I'd never been there before, and I'd never seen such genuine poverty. I mean, people living in shacks, people running around in no shoes. Even people like, you know, pastors were living in very remote, very low-level conditions. And I thought, my goodness, these people are truly poor. I've never seen any kind of poverty like that here in the United States. The Bible says he's going to provide for us those things that are the necessities. And oftentimes we think that our luxuries are the necessities, but that's not true. We should be satisfied with food and clothing, housing, the basic things of this world. Colossians 3, 1 and 2 says, "Seek those things which are above, where Christ is sitting at the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things of the world." And so if we have food and raiment, if we have the basics, we should be satisfied with that. You know, even the world is recognizing that money can't make you happy in a certain sense. They've done some studies and they found that people are more happy when they earn more money as they move out of poverty and into the, you know, middle classes. Especially people moving from poverty into lower or upper middle class, the more money they get, the more happy they are, up to about $75,000 here in the United States for average Americans. So, you know, you make more money, you're more happy. You can buy more things. You can get a nicer house, a nicer car. You can have a vacation. You can have recreation. You can do the things that most people like to do, up to about $75,000. But in addition to that, people don't find that they're actually more happy. Maybe they can get a nicer car, they can have a bigger house, they can have better vacations, but ultimately speaking, you know, going from $75,000 to maybe a couple hundred thousand, for most people, that doesn't actually make them happier. It maybe gets them more stuff, but it doesn't actually make them happier. And then above that, there are some people who actually do increase in happiness the more money they get. But those are the kind of people who are greedy. Those are the kind of people who love money. For the average American, or for the majority of Americans, once you give about $75,000 or so as kind of your, you know, upper middle income, you can have millions of dollars more, and it's really not going to add to their enjoyment of life. They maybe could buy more things, but actually they're not any happier. In fact, I've heard of a movement afoot now called minimalism, where people are kind of carving out the things of their life that they don't really need. So they're in a small house, they have only the things that they need in that house, and they're trying not to accumulate a lot of stuff, because along with a lot of stuff comes a lot of problems. So even our unsaved world today recognizes that there can be value in just being satisfied with what you have, being satisfied with kind of a minimal standard of living. And so I think that's kind of a good idea, to be satisfied with the basic things that God provides. So we should never set our affection on material goods. Instead, we should strive to be content in whatever circumstances God gives us. Secondly, greed produces a wide range of problems. Let's go on to verses 9 to 10. "They that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith, and pierce themselves through with many sorrows." Greed produces a wide range of problems. Those who will be rich, that's talking about those who want to be rich, those who purpose to be rich, those who desire to be rich, those who are greedy. These are the people who love money. They desire wealth. They crave material goods and the luxuries that money can buy. They're determined to accumulate things because they think that that's the meaning of life. That's how they're going to be happy, is to have the most things. Well, what are the dangers involved in that? Let's say you have plenty of money to accumulate everything you want. Is there a problem associated with that? Well, he mentions several here. Greedy people are entangled by several things: temptations, snares, and lusts. First of all, temptation is a solicitation to do evil. Now, we know that our enemy or our enemies, our spiritual enemies, are the world, the flesh, and the devil. And they can use the love of money to solicit us to do evil. Money presents a large temptation for many people because they want what money can buy. And so they're willing to do many things, even illegal things, ungodly, immoral things, in order to get that money. So temptations, ensnarements, it presents a snare. This word originally referred to a trap for catching birds. So there are snares, there are traps for those who are dead set on making or getting more money. Traps like gambling, shady business deals, get-rich-quick schemes. Their greed often leads to crime, abuse, and even violence. For some of you, the name Bernie Madoff or Madoff may ring a bell. He conned thousands of investors out of about $20 billion. He was arrested in 2008 and sentenced to 150 years in prison. I believe he died here just a few years ago. He was ensnared by his greed. He loved that millionaire lifestyle. And many of the people who invested with Bernie Madoff loved that millionaire lifestyle as well. They wanted a high return for their investment. In fact, beyond what was reasonable. And so they invested with Bernie Madoff and they lost most, if not all, of their money. Well, not only temptation and a snare, but also many foolish and hurtful lusts, drowning desires in verse 9. These things drown men in destruction and perdition. Destruction is the word ruin. The desire for wealth often leads to bankruptcy, family failure, and even prison time. I've been reading recently about some professional athletes who during their career, they might make millions of dollars. One fellow I was reading about made about $50 million during his NFL career. And by the end of the career, guess how much money he had? Zero. He was in debt because of his bad investment, bad use of his money. A lot of these people, as soon as they get a lot of money, they start spending it like water. And so they don't have anything to show for their years of high pay during their NFL career. And so there's a long list of former NFL players who have gone into bankruptcy because of their bad financial decisions. So they are ruined, financially speaking. And then perdition is a word that implies eternal misery and hell, because it's hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. You know, they think that they're trusting in their riches. What did Jesus say? You cannot serve God and mammon, money. You can't do it. You're either going to love the other one or hate the other, or hate the one and love the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. So people choose to serve money, and that leads to hell. That leads to destruction. That leads to perdition. Martin Siegel was one of Boesky's sources of insider information. He served 2 months in prison for his crimes. Siegel seemed to have it all: a beautiful wife, a spectacular Connecticut oceanfront estate, glowing press. But Mr. Siegel came to feel like he couldn't survive on his earnings of more than $500,000 a year. I think most of us could probably survive on $500,000 a year, but this guy couldn't. His house had cost him $750,000. His wife needed full-time help with their baby. Their Manhattan apartment was too small, and the one they considered appropriate would cost another $1 million. So Mr. Siegel convinced himself he needed to provide this fellow, Mr. Boesky, with insider trading information. Now, you can ask around to find out what insider information is if you've never heard of that before. It's a Wall Street, you know, stocks and bonds kind of thing. And it's illegal to provide this insider information to those who don't have the right to have it. So greed for these people led to temptation, a snare, and many foolish and hurtful lusts. There are lots of negatives, lots of real problems that go along with the love for money. One of those is debt. Let me give you kind of a few startling statistics here about debt. The average credit card debt in America for each American family today is $6,270. On average, American families are $6,000 just on credit cards. Americans owe $986 billion in credit card debt. American households carry a total of $17 trillion in debt. $12 trillion of that is mortgage debt. The outstanding federal student loan balance is $1.6 trillion. And the average student carrying that debt is carrying about $37,000 of debt. That's an average college student after they finish college. And for some, digging out of debt proves impossible. Last year, there were 374,240 non-business bankruptcy filings. And for this year, it's 20% ahead of last year. So some of that debt and bankruptcy, no doubt, is not due to the love of money. But I would say that a good portion of that is due to greed. People take on debt because they want stuff. They enjoy having the things that money can buy. And if they don't have the money for that, what do? They go into debt. And then, of course, you have to service that debt. You have to pay your bills. And for some people, that proves to be impossible. So they get into all kinds of trouble. It submerges, it ensnares people in foolish and hurtful lusts. And it results in all kinds of evil. As it says here in verse 10, the love of money is the root of all evil, or we could say all kinds of evil. I think that's the sense of this. And notice it says not money is the root of all evil. That's what we sometimes hear people say. Oh, money is the root of all evil. But it doesn't say that. It says the love of money. In other words, greed is that root of all kinds of evil. Some people love the money itself. I suppose there are some people who just love, what was that one cartoon character who loved to count his money and throw his money in the air? Scrooge McDuck or something like that, if I remember from my childhood years. So, I mean, there are people like that who love money itself, but most people, it's not, you know, the bills or the coins in their hand. It's the things that we can have because of money. And so that love for things can get you into big trouble. It causes all kinds of evil. Somebody said that love of money is a root which produces all kinds of bad fruit. And when you think of it, you know, what sin has not been committed out of the desire or love for money? I mean, every sin and crime and abuse and violence, all of it can be traced back to a love for money. In verse 10, it says they coveted after. Some have coveted after. This word covet means to grasp for, to stretch out for something, reaching or desiring something. The grammar suggests continual pursuit of money. They're grasping, they're pursuing this money because they think it's going to make them happy. And really, those without money can be just as greedy as those with money. You know, greed is not necessarily dependent upon how much you have or how little you have. You can be very wealthy and not greedy at all. You can be very poor and very greedy. So that's really not the point here. You can covet, you can grasp for it, whether you have it or not. They've erred from the faith, and again in verse 10. They have wandered away, strayed from the truth. He's specifically in this context talking about false teachers, those who have heard the truth and are wandering away and leading other people away. They've gone astray because of their love for money. And I don't know if you know cases of this, but you can think of maybe people who have been, you know, made a profession of faith, they've been living the Christian life, but then they want more and more things, and maybe they get a different job, and because of their job, they can't go to church anymore, and pretty soon they're not even going to church, and pretty soon they're not following the Lord at all. So they may stray from the faith. And then they experience many sorrows at the end of verse 10. They're pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Much grief and pain skewers the lives of the greedy. Once greed ensnares someone, it results in all manner of negative consequences. Psalm 32:10, many are the sorrows of the wicked. Think of all the wickedness, all the evil that is done in order to get money. Michael Milken spent almost 2 years in prison for his crimes, plus he paid millions in fines. But I don't suppose most greedy people really go to jail or to prison. But what do? Well, they end up working 12, 14 hours a day. They end up focusing everything on money. They're not taking care of their wife and their children. They're trying to buy things to satisfy others. You know, the focus is so much on money that they let their relationships slide. They let their relationship with God. They can't go to church on Sunday. They can't serve the Lord because they're so invested in making money. And so the important things in life, like family and church and community, those things go by the wayside because of the almighty dollar. I have to make more money. And I can satisfy my children and my wife just by buying them things. And as long as I'm making money, then that's what I'm here to do. Well, that's not supposed to be the center of our lives. And so what problems are you going through right now because of pursuing financial gain? What problems in your life are associated with the accumulation of things? Or maybe the debt that you've taken on because you want things? Well, you might not say I'm greedy, you might not say I love money, but if you've taken on so much debt in order to have the things that you want, well, I don't think that that's far away from the love of money, or at least the love of the material things. We call it materialism, a desire to have the things so that I can enjoy my life. But again, our job is not supposed to be wealth or the acquisition of wealth or the enjoyment of all the wonderful things. Our desire is to serve God and take care of our family and to be satisfied with the things that God provides for us. So greed produces a wide range of trouble, temptation, snares, lust, destruction, perdition. And obviously we need to avoid those things. Those are things that we need to avoid. We're not pursuing after money. We're pursuing contentment and the values that God has. And so that gets us into verse 11. But thou, O man of God, flee these things and follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, and meekness. So instead of pursuing money, we're to pursue spiritual values. And notice the contrast here. But thou, O man of God, unlike the false teachers, unlike the pagans, unlike those who love money, unlike the greedy people in our world today, we should be pursuing something else. We're not pursuing money and the things that it can buy. We have to have it. It's a tool. Money's just a tool that we need to get by in this life. Money's a resource that God gives us so that we can enjoy life. And like I said, I got no problem enjoying the blessings of life that God provides for you. But what's more important? What's much more important than money and material things that we have and all the enjoyable things of life? What's much more important are these values that he gives us here. Godliness with contentment. The false teachers are chasing after money, but the man of God pursues personal virtues. So notice it says here, first of all, we flee from these things. He's just talked about the love of money and the root of all evil and coveting and erring from the faith. Flee these things. Make sure that you're not taken in by greed and the problems that go on with the pursuit of money. Flee from those things. Somebody said, given the context, what the man of God flees from are the evils associated with the love of money, particularly materialism and consumerism, the idea that you're going to be happy by all the nice things that you have. Flee these things, he says. Avoid debt whenever possible. Don't strive to be rich or to hoard earthly possessions. As Jesus said, don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. So most of us, God has blessed abundantly. We have treasures. We have nice things that we enjoy. Well, that's fine. That's good. Enjoy those things. But make sure you also have treasure in heaven. So we flee these things, the things that cause temptations and snares and foolish and hurtful lusts. We don't want to end up drowning in destruction and perdition. So we flee these things. As Proverbs 23:4 says, labor not to be rich. It's fine to be rich if you become rich, but that should not be our ultimate goal. What should we be following after? Things like righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, and meekness. Follow after these things. The word means to pursue, to run swiftly in order to catch something. The man of God has spiritual goals. We all have goals for our family. We all want to provide nice things for our family. We want to have a nice house and a nice car and health care and vacations. We want all those things. But we ought to be swiftly running after these spiritual goals, godly characteristics, not materialistic things, not consumerist things, godly things. These are the righteous character traits that we ought to have. So righteousness here is basically just doing the right thing. It's outward behavior, doing right. We ought to be concerned to do right things, godly living, honesty. Jesus said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. So Speaking of pursuing, we ought to be hungry and thirsting after this spiritual quality. Godliness is more the inner aspect of righteousness. External righteousness is based on the inner man, the godliness of the inner man. Faith, of course, is trust in God. We are to walk by faith and not by sight, trusting God to provide what we need. Love, of course, we're supposed to love God supremely and love our fellow man. Patience refers to remaining upright under a load. We're not swerved from deliberate purpose, even though great trials and sufferings may beset us. And then meekness, of course, refers to gentleness or humility. These spiritual qualities are far more important than financial wealth. Sometimes we see people who are wealthy and we have great admiration for them, but we really ought to admire people with these kind of characteristics. Not so much the things that money can buy, but spiritual values, spiritual qualities like this. The man of God pursues moral excellence, spiritual growth, and good character. Money is not a primary motivation. We're not laboring to be rich. We're not laboring to have the biggest or the nicest things. We're laboring to serve God and to serve one another. What really matters to us is good character and good behavior. Our pursuit is spiritual maturity, and part of that is contentment with what God gives us. So we don't love money or the things that money can buy. We love God and we love others, and if God gives us money, well, we use that money for godly and good purposes. Even after paying out hundreds of millions of dollars for his crimes and spending time in prison, Michael Milken, he's still alive today, and he's still a very rich man. His net worth today, I'm told, is about $6 billion. He's still one of the richest people in the whole world. And to his credit, over the last few years, he's been giving away a lot of his money. And some of these very, very wealthy individuals give away a lot of their money to their credit. Michael Milken had cancer, and he's been giving away a lot of his money to cancer research. So, you know, good for him. We give him credit for that. None of us will ever approach the level of wealth, probably, of a Michael Milken, unless maybe some of us will be wealthy. We don't know. But that doesn't mean that we're not susceptible to greed. We might think, well, a guy with billions of dollars, surely they're greedy. Well, even people who don't have two dimes to rub together, we can still be greedy as well. Poor people may be, in fact, greedier than rich people. Greed, I think, is a common problem no matter what your wealth or what your income is. Well, the Bible tells us here to flee from greed and its dangers. What we should be motivated by is spiritual realities. These values are what we ought to be pursuing and following after. We should be pursuing God and spiritual growth and the strength and vitality of our family much more than we pursue money. The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And so we need to avoid that snare. If money presents a snare for us, perhaps in the form of debt, or perhaps in the form of the temptation toward illegal things, well, we need to avoid that at all costs. If you find yourself motivated by money, what do you need to do? If you find you look into your own heart and life, you think to yourself, boy, I kind of am greedy. Well, that's a sin. The Bible says if we confess our sin, he's faithful and just to forgive us and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. So this is a sin that we need to confess to the Lord. And if it's a regular thing occurring in our heart and life, we need to ask God to help us to undercut that sin and to remove it from our lives. And one of the best ways to undercut the sin of greed is to give. Instead of being greedy, give generously to others. Generosity is a good way to deal with a problem of greed and trying to be a blessing to others, and giving generously to the work of the Lord and to the needs of others is a good way to undercut the sin of greed. Well, verse 6 says, godliness with contentment is great gain. That's what we ought to be seeking and pursuing after, that godliness with contentment. Value from God's point of view is godliness without reference to money. We need to learn to be happy, to be content with what God provides. Our affections, the Bible tells us, are set on things above, not on things of the earth. I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. I trust that that's our desire and prayer as well. Let's close in prayer.